My name is Martha Hamm. I'm 60 years old. Today is May 5th, 2013, and we're here in St. George, Utah. I'm with my partner, Janine Donald, and we both have been directors of Splore.
My name is Janine Donald, and I'm 30 years old, and it is May 5th, 2013, and we're in St. George, Utah, and I am with my partner, Martha, and she is one of my mentors, and we have both been directors at Splore. And correction, I'm 31 years old.
May I start? I had scheduled an appointment to come into StoryCorps to help someone else tell their story, and my girlfriend said, "Wait a minute. You should go in and tell your story about Splore." And I thought, who do I want to be in the booth with? And I thought of you because you just said mentor. And that has always been something that mystifies me at times when people talk about me as the founder or someone spectacular in terms of beginning Splore. And I wanted to come into the booth with you because I was about your age when I started Splore with many, many other people. I had the first file folder, I should put it that way. And I wasn't a visionary. This was something that began kind of like a chain letter. You know how when you write a chain letter and you send it out to 10 folks and then you say, now you need to send this chain letter out to 10 more people? Mm-hmm. Thank goodness that's worked out, because that's why Splore has been sustained. And the only reason I think anyone would be calling me a founder, or I just read somewhere in an article, a visionary, is because the community has kept up the chain letter, and no one's dropped the ball, and it's 35 years later. And I wanted to have this conversation with you because I wanted you to know how unwitting a lot of the things that we did back then were, and they just happened to work out. How scared we were, and I say we because the minute I sent out 10 chain letters, 10 people showed up, and it was we. And so I have been so impressed with how you handle yourself as Splore's director, and you remind me so much of what our community was like in the early days, and it was simple. And it was, we were authentic only because we didn't even know how to pretend.
Right.
So that's why I wanted to be here today with you.
Martha, can you explain what Splore is?
Janine, would you do that?
Splore, we are based here in Utah, and we provide life-changing outdoor adventures for people from all walks of life. We work with people with disabilities, people who have had accidents and now need some extra support in getting outside, adults with mental illness, children with autism, veterans, really anyone who just needs a helping hand in order to get outside, and work with a lot of families as well. And our goal is to be a catalyst for something positive in a person's life. And it's, yeah, that's it in a nutshell.
Well, and that's how we started out, you know, as well, trying to provide those trips for people with what we would say back then, disabilities. Now the language is offering accessible trip to all abilities. Do I have that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But one of the things that has been thrilling through the years has been the community that is built, and everybody who gets close in Splore, participants, staff, volunteers, somehow it seems there's a mark or a change or something that happens in their lives. I met my husband in Splore. Through Splore, I met my best friend through Splore and a lot of the women who are really close to me. How's that going for you? I mean, your connections with the community.
I haven't met my husband or, you know, my best friend, but I definitely, Splore feels like family. And we just did a happy hour this past week, and there were a lot of folks who were involved in the 80s and 90s that came, and quite a few who I'd never met. And there just seems to be this instant kinship with folks who have been involved with Splore at any point in time, and this bond. And
they got the chain letter.
Yeah, they got the chain letter. And I think it's really easy to be comfortable around Splore people, and there's really, it's easy to be authentic and genuine, and you revert back to the most goofy, you know, core of yourself, and people embrace you and love you. And I think when I think about Splore, it is everything that is positive in the world, and that is why we want people to feel loved and accepted, and that connection with community and with the outdoors. And I personally, I mean, my life has been changed working at Splore, and it continues to, it is in a constantly evolving process, and I'm excited, you know, to see what's going to happen over the next 5 years or 10 years with the organization. But I think that core sense of community and that spirit, it's, from my perception, has almost always been there. And that was one of my questions, is if you could describe that first Splore trip and what that felt like to be on that first Splore trip. And was it even Splore at that time?
It was not Splore. The first trip we ran for persons with disabilities was with Ken Slight and Ken Slight Expeditions. It was with the Work Activity Center, and I was so scared. I was so frightened we were going to hurt somebody, kill somebody, or they would have an awful time. The people who came on the trip were in wheelchairs. A lot of the folks had cerebral palsy in real snarled up bodies. The staff were fantastic. They arrived, well, first of all, they got to Moab and drove the road along the river. And it was like a cartoon. The driver just drove like a bat out of hell. And all these disabled people were in there saying, "Whee!" You know, and I was so scared. I thought the bus was going to go off the road. And I thought, well, my goodness, the river trip is going to look pretty tame next to this. But anyway, we got to the shore, and the staff were so comfortable, you know, with the folks with disabilities. And I'll never forget Steve Elam and Butch, they big, strong guys, and they would just reach in and with one arm and lift somebody out of a wheelchair, one of the guys, and just almost slam him down on the beach. But the person laughed and thought it was really funny and playful, and because we were all ready to treat them like porcelain. And we'd practiced our lifts and to do it this way or that way and ask questions and so on. And so thank goodness for the work activity staff, because they led the way on helping us to relax. But it was just a one-day trip.
And did how long did it take until you felt like that you got a sense of that spirit, that magic that we talk about at Splore?
Right. Well, I have always wanted to help people, and I had that young person enthusiasm of I wanted to make a difference. So I kept looking at it from the perspective of helping other people. And then I would say when I realized how magical this whole experience was when I was helped. And that there were ways that I was trying to be too perfect, or ways that I was hiding my fear about running a rapid or whatever. And being around these folks, it changed me more than the trip changed them. Mm. And it changed the guides. It changed the volunteers. And, you know, because you have to keep in mind, we're talking 1977, Public Law 94-142, that just allowed people with disabilities to go to public school, that said school district, you have to make it accessible to them, had passed not that many years earlier. And then American Disabilities Act had not passed. Vocational Rehab Act 504 had passed in the 70s, which had pushed accessibility. So the public really had not had much exposure to people with disabilities. So we were all very inexperienced in having a relationship with people with disabilities.
So you were learning together. They were learning the rivers, and you were learning how to interact and work with folks with very different life experiences. And
you know, whenever we would become too much of a know-it-all about how to conduct an activity or a trip with people with disabilities, there was a real important person who was a volunteer. His name was John Gallen. He would set us straight. John hit a tree skiing when he was 18 years old. Phenomenally handsome, bright, charismatic, looked great without a shirt on. But John would sort of point out with a smile, it wasn't mean-spirited, but he'd say, "You guys are severely able-bodied." And, you know, and that was like, all right, okay, do a little check here on how we're approaching things. Mm. Had you heard of John?
Mm-hmm. No. Mm-hmm.
So what do you think he meant by that?
I think that he meant that there was an elevation. It wasn't, we weren't operating on a level playing field, and it was unfair, and that there was an element of talking down to the person with a disability. You know, I mean, he would say, John would say, you know, I meet people and all they see is my wheelchair. And one of the things I love is driving my car. And I do not have a handicapped license plate because I don't want people to be driving down the road and look at me in the car and go, oh, yeah. There's a gimp. There's a handicapped guy. This is a place where the playing field is, you know, is level. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been frightened about or felt awkward or uncomfortable about finding a way to connect with someone with a disability?
Absolutely. Yes. I think for me, the first time I meet somebody with a disability or... and honestly, I mean, even from a different culture, you know, even somebody who wears different clothes than I do, mm-hmm. that awkwardness and feeling unsure about how to approach them or what to say, or, you know, if there's a language barrier of any kind, you know, if I ask them a question, will that just make them feel uncomfortable? And so I think it is really what helps with that in like my travels in Latin America as well as Explorer is it really helps have some activity that you can focus on and start to break down some of those barriers by engaging in something. And whether or not that's building a water storage tank in Honduras or, you know, strapping boat, you know, bags into a boat on the river, or setting up camp on the beach, I think those activities, natural conversations come out of that. And it's amazing how every time, you know, you do get to know somebody from a different walk of life, it's like, oh, that wasn't so hard. And, you know, really, we have all these commonalities and blah, blah, blah. And yet, I would think that it would then make it easier, you know, going forward. But I think I still experience, I feel really insecure at first meeting someone from a different walk of life, and still feel it on sport trips or when I start working with a child with autism who's nonverbal. And, you know, how am I going to go about getting this kid on the wall? And yeah, it's always a learning experience for sure. And
yeah, that's a great point about activities and keeping that as a central place to interact, because it's not necessarily verbal, and you can just find a way to participate. And I think that's what we really wanted to do in the beginning, is not just make the wilderness and the out of doors accessible to people with disabilities, but find a way that they could participate. Maybe they weren't going to row a boat, but they're going to flip the pancakes and make breakfast, be the, you know, the breakfast cook. And maybe that's something else for us to talk a little bit about, is just that whole connection to landscape, because that's very important as part of Explore, is making this incredible landscape of Utah available to people with disabilities, because being in a chair or on crutches, or also because of being in an institution, they might not have access to that. I mean, what are your thoughts about how important that is with Explore?
I think it is entirely enmeshed in what we do. And I mean, the outdoors, talk about how the magic of the outdoors. I often talk about how the outdoors really does most of what happens at Explore. That magic is just being outside. And, you know, over the years, as we work more and more with low income families and schools from some of the low income areas of Salt Lake Valley, realizing that there's a huge need. You may not have a disability, but your family doesn't have the financial resources to buy you a ski pass at a Brighton ski resort. And so you're 15 and you've never been up Big Cottonwood Canyon. And what never gets old is seeing the delight on a kid's face as they get out at Silver Lake, at the top of Big Cottonwood Canyon, and they can't believe that, you know, they're only 20 minutes from their school. And the same thing was camping at Onion. I think that's the most fantastic view possibly in southern Utah, is camping there at Onion Beach. And I think, and you're talking about being in the kitchen, you're in the kitchen looking out at this amazing... If you're not inspired looking at the La Salles as the sun's setting, I don't know what's going to do it. And then usually it's accompanied by laughter and people in costumes. And I think just the whole package, you know, the outdoors, that's the backdrop to everything that happens at Explore. And yes, we do indoor rock climbing, but that's really feeds people into the outdoor piece. And yeah.
I have a story about an individual who actually worked with Splore. He was a guide, Tim. Tim was in a wheelchair and also environmentalist, just as that term was starting to catch on. And he often testified at some of the hearings around Utah when there was the possibility of putting a road in a wilderness area. And so there was a group of folks who thought that what they would do is pull the handicap card and say the reason we need to put a road through this particular wilderness area is to make it accessible for people with disabilities. And it was great. He got a lot of folks from Splore who'd been on Splore trips, and they all rolled into the hearing and on their crutches and wheelchairs, whatever. I mean, they really turned up the volume on their visual presentation of their disability, and they testified one after another, saying, "What makes you think that because I'm in a wheelchair that I have a different aesthetic of with respect to the wilderness?" And it was terrific that they made a difference in that particular issue, and they absolutely would not be used to say you're going to hurt the environment because I have a disability. And I think some of that flowed from the fact that they'd learned some ways, you know, to have access, which I think, you know, Splore's helped them with.
Yeah, absolutely. I would, because you, as you have said, you know, you were quite young when Splore started and getting the, and then what year did you leave Splore in terms of actually being an employee? Was that 80?
I'm not sure, but 83, 84, okay. Somewhere in there.
And so, you know, almost 20 years has passed. 30 years has passed since you left Splore. And how has it shaped your life that, you know, really this relatively small period where you were entrenched in it? Yeah, I'd love to hear how it's continued to shape your life, or has it?
It has. I think what it did for me is I learned I could do hard things and things that frightened me. I keep using that term because I have to tell you the reason I left Splore is because I was I couldn't sleep at night. I was afraid somebody was going to die, and I was feeling really like I'd done a bad thing that I had created this monster almost of these outdoor adventure activities, and we had a number of close calls. We had a guide who broke his neck. He almost became a quadriplegic. I mean, there were a number of things that came up, but we kept working it out. And I knew that there were some other people who could carry the load, and it was time for me not to have those nightmares. But I think how Splore shaped me is learning also how to manage stress. Because I'm not as frightened or stressed as I was back then. But I learned some things there in the trenches about that. Kind of drawing a blank. I don't have anything wonderful to say about it.
Well, was there even an option to close? Did you even consider closing Splore, or at that point did it already have kind of a life of its own?
The chain letter had been sent out, baby. And you couldn't have killed Splore at that point because there was such a strong community. of participants, volunteers, and guides. And the smartest thing I ever did was pass the torch to Patty Mulvihill, the second director of Splore. And the way in which that happened, she was an intern, and she came in to my office, which was my breakfast room in my house, and with ironed shorts, pressed shorts, in a cute matching outfit. And I was, of course, looked like hell, but, you know, and I think I'd probably been cleaning crapper cans or something, but just off a river trip. And she, just in this perky way, said, "You know, I'd like to have your job someday." and she did. And, wow. Yeah. So I think it's been important to, at each turn, when a director leaves, for them to be able to have that feeling of passing the torch. So we did it that way, and I think it's happened that way for many years now. Not always, but not in your case. We were so glad that someone came up, maybe not the past director, but someone found the torch and got it to you, you know.
Did the fear go away when you left Splore, or was it still, did it still keep you up at nights, even though you weren't directly involved?
It didn't keep me up at night because I realized that that was my problem, that I watched other people manage it, and that and so maybe that again, that's how it shaped me, is realizing after I left and looked at how things went and how people were managing it, it was like, wow, I had that in my head. Mm-hmm. That was my struggle. Mm-hmm. That doesn't match the reality of the situation.
And it is risky what we're doing, mm-hmm. and I feel it on a daily basis as well. And it's because there's a lot of variables you could plan for, but Mother Nature serves up a whole lot that you can't. And that risk is, I think, why we enjoy river rafting, but also, you know, what makes us really uncomfortable in a lot of moments, especially with populations that we work with that are very vulnerable and are putting all their trust in us. And I, you know, go back and forth. I feel like every spring I'm like, maybe I'll just be a swamper on the river trips this summer. Maybe I won't actually get behind the oars. And every year I go through this, and, you know, it takes a couple of trips, I feel like, to get kind of my sea legs back. But honestly, even on the Moab Daily, every Splore trip, I have butterflies in my stomach, and my palms are sweaty and clammy. And I don't think that the weight of the risks that we're taking every trip, I don't think it'll ever go away for me.
Well, the other thing that I now realize when I look at those risks is that we're afraid of hurting someone or misrepresenting an experience and putting them in a bad position. It's their life. I mean, think about it from the perspective of this woman who's a high quad, cannot feed herself, can't even smoke her own cigarette. On this trip, you know, it was like, I'm not a smoker, but I would help her smoke. But I think that's what I began to key into. If she has the courage to do this, I'll find the courage. I can't imagine that, being a high quad in coming down the river.
And I think courage is a good word, mm-hmm. and it's definitely something that I think, since working at Splore, is something I think about a lot just personally, is that it's really easy to do the things that are easy for us to do and comfortable for us to do. And if you're in a wheelchair, to go on a overnight river rafting trip and having, knowing that you're going to have to ask people for help, and you're not going to be able to do everything that you normally do at home, takes a lot of courage. And that has definitely inspired me to do things that don't come easily and that may take me time and time again of trying, and that it's okay. It's okay to have to ask for help, but it's really hard. And we see so many people on Splore who are inspiration to continue to tap into that well of courage or what's the word I'm looking for? I want to say like gung-ho, or where you just go for something, even though it may, you don't know how it's going to turn out.
So we've got 10 minutes left. What about a story? You know, you talk to people all the time. Do you have a client story that comes to mind? Maybe one you've shared or maybe one you haven't shared.
I just recently did our Rock On program, which is our 6-week one-on-one mentoring program for children with autism. And I hadn't done it in a couple of years, but it's one of the first things I did when I started working for Splore. And I worked with a little boy named Leland, and he speaks some, but not very much. And he has autism, and he was just the most amazing kid, and was really unsure of the equipment at first, really unsure of the climbing wall, really unsure of me. And it took us, you know, and then I, working with his parents, like, it's okay. Like, he doesn't have to get off the ground this week or next week. We're just going to take our time. And when he's done, you know, you don't have to stay for the whole hour. And by the end of the 6 weeks, he was really into cars, little toy cars. I'm putting the toy cars up on the holds, and he's scrambling up the rocks, grabbing them, and the smile on his face every time he got one of the cars. And I had so much fun and felt so much pride in what he accomplished in those 6 weeks, and just an amazing reminder to me of why we do what we do. And his mom, one of the quotes she said to me, it was one of the strange blessings in Leland getting diagnosed with autism. It was meeting this rich community of people who see him for who he is and want to support him in doing that. And that is, for me, that just kind of renewed me all over again, what we offer. Do you have a story?
The story I'm thinking of has to do, well, it occurred many years after I left Splore, probably 1990, when I was a struggling graduate student in social work. And I had taken a job with the state of Utah, going into nursing homes and assessing people with disabilities, particularly adults with cerebral palsy, very involved cerebral palsy. And that my job was to determine whether they could live outside the nursing home in a less restrictive setting, as it was called. So I was assigned to go to this nursing home called The Plantation. And, you know, I'm from the South. It was like, The Plantation. Oh, my Lord. So I get there, and there is a concentration. There's a real community of adults with cerebral palsy, pretty severe cerebral palsy, living there. And it makes perfect sense because the administration, the staff were all very dialed into them. But all the same, these folks wanted to live independently or in a group home or a supervised apartment setting or whatever. So I haven't been involved with Splore at that point for many years, not on the board, not with a fundraiser. I just had my head down in finishing up graduate school. So I'm interviewing this woman who was in a chair, and the only way she could move was with one foot. She couldn't really use her hands, and she would move that wheelchair with one foot. So I asked her, what is your hobby? What are your leisure interests? And she looked at me and she said, river running. And I thought, has the CP Intelligentsia FBI done a background check on me? Is she sweet talking me? What is this? And I mean, those were the things that were just running through my mind. And she took that foot, and she was in one of those wheelchairs, kind of sports wheelchairs, you know, where they can do pirouettes, mm-hmm. they can do a 360. And she did this 360 and came around and put her face right in my face. And she said, I go with Splore. And actually, she said, Splore. And I just went right to the last page and said, recommended for independently. That was easy. But, right. But I think that what was so wonderful to me was this person who was so disabled. She described herself as a river runner. And that's been, I suppose, one of my proudest moments of Splore, was that moment when she said that.
I can only imagine. And yeah, and I personally am so thankful that you sent out that chain letter, because 35 years later, that idea is still, is truly still changing lives. And I think us staff and the ones who volunteer are probably the most affected. But I know that every participant that comes on a Splore trip is touched in one way or another. And as are we,
the volunteers,
right,
and
right.
staff, you know.
Yes.
That level playing field. That's when it really works, you know, is when we aren't the do-gooder and we're helping them, you know.
Right.
I mean, when we can shift it away. Things kind of get a little messy otherwise.
You guys mentioned this chain email a bunch. Mm-hmm. What is the chain?
A chain letter back in the day. Actually, they do it on email now, too. But someone might write a letter and say, send this little reading out. And they send it out to 10 people. And it says at the bottom, make sure you send this to 10 other people. When I was a kid, people would do that through the mail. And they would do things like maybe send out a letter to 10 people and put a dollar in it or a stick of gum. And then say, you know, what you need to do is send, when you get this letter, you send it out to 10 people with a stick of gum and good things will happen. You know, I mean, there would be some sort of saying, you know, about that. And that's what it felt like, is just writing the first chain letter and sending it out.
What did it say?
Well, it just said, come help, and let's it, you know, it's metaphorical, and let's build this organization and a community that makes this fantastic landscape here in Utah accessible to all. The chain letter has changed through the years. Thank goodness. It's needed updating. And so what are you going to put in the chain letter? You're is director.
Oh, that's a good question.
What's just one thing in your heart you want to be in the chain letter?
I'd put, come share your passion for the outdoors. And leave it at that, because I think that passion piece is what is a huge piece of the magic that's created.
Do you have any last words for each other?
I love you, Janine.
I love you too. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to be the director at Spore. You had no idea, but thank you.
And thank you for being the director of Spore, because nobody would call me a founder today if there wasn't a director of Spore today, or a visionary. Oh, my word.
Still carrying the torch. Mm-hmm.